show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour as we begin this Twisted Tuesday edition of the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. There's just really nothing like this out there, quite frankly. And it is. It's Twisted Tuesday. I love it, though. I really and for truly, I do. I love it when we sort of get that whole wavelength thing going on between me here and y'all there. I just got done writing the post for tonight's show and shipped it over to Susan, News Ninja Susan, who kindly posted it. And if you go to headonradionetwork.com and you have a look, you'll have a note. You'll note that I said that I'm not going to allow Herb Cain to steal this program tonight because there's just too much real stuff going on. So lo and behold, what do I see right before showtime coming from our old buddy Marty out on the left coast? Please, no clips of Herman Cain. You know what? I'm proud to tell you that I am a man of my word. And there will be no clips of Herb Cain. Yeah, I just sat and watched that truly bizarre press conference. But then again, truly bizarre human beings tend to have truly bizarre press conferences, I do suppose. My only takeaway from it came when some member of the for-profit media asked a really telling, pertinent, piercing, incisive question.
Well, Mr. Cain, do you think if you thought about it some more, you might remember some of those women you sexually harassed?
And Herb's response was, well, it was classic Herb now, wasn't it? Absolutely. He said, no, I don't think I'm going to have an aha moment. I'm grateful. Very grateful. Because I, you know, Herb's a singer. But I don't think he can hit these notes. And I don't relish the thought of him appearing in a video with a sort of pencil and paper drawing of a guy with a pipe wrench chasing him while he. No. Although there was a brunette woman in the Aha Take on Me video that the guy was chasing. No, see, I can't hear Herb hitting those notes. Although there's a certain amount of irony in that tune. Needless to say, not going to answer questions, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, Jim writing in, Cain, I just don't remember. Bullshit. Marty says, thank you. Shannon Moore put me through enough of it. I think I could only take it if Bill Maher was taking it apart. Well, thanks. Thanks. So I rate somewhere on the scale down below Shannon and Bill Maher. Bill Maher is and then Shannon. And, and I spent all that time pulling out that, aha take on me clip. You bring your A game, and what do you get? But, no, really, Herb Cain is a singer. I mean, you heard him butchering and satirizing probably one of the most profound verses written in the last 50 years, John Lennon's Imagine. But now we know, because I did some research before the program, and I understand much better now why it is that Herb Cain feels no need to tell any of us about what happened. You see, there's only one person he's got to tell, and it's not Mrs. Cain, by the way. And so I guess I'm kind of breaking a promise, but I don't think this counts as breaking the promise. Here's who Herb has to tell.
I must tell Jesus all of my trials. I cannot bear these burdens alone. In my distress, He kindly will help me. For He always cares and loves His own.
Oh, you guys have gone pro. Why do I even bother? You're so far out ahead of the curve. I play the aha clip. David in Tennessee says, Bob, I suddenly want to shampoo my hair. Seen my pert? Yeah, but now that you've heard Herb Cain singing, I must tell Jesus, David, you probably want to hurl your lunch. Seen my bag? Meanwhile, Kim noting, oh, hitting those notes? I'm sure Herb would hit them there notes if a lady squeezed his balls hard enough. Yeah. Oh, God. But not to worry. It is, of course, because Repiglicans are such antediluvian souls. There's an explanation for all of this. And who better to turn to for that explanation than, of course, that impotent pill-popping propagandist and friend O' Herb Cain, Flush Flemball. Take it, Flush.
I have to tell you something. We've had liberalism roaring through our culture for 50 years. At times, it has been sneaky, slow, deliberate. At other times, it has roared its way through. And as I listen to earnest journalists in their 30s and 40s describe what Herman Cain is said to have done. When I listen to journalists in their 30s and 40s unable to explain what Cain has done, but treating it as though it is reprehensible, I sadly conclude we're losing this. Political correctness, which is censorship, has now spread to behavior, not just speech. It's spread to behavior.
My friends, what is America coming to? When a man can't reach under a woman's skirt and get a good grope, without being subjected to public scrutiny and humiliation. This, my friends, is liberalism at its very worst. Socialism on the march.
And sexual harassment now is a political weapon, and it's anything anybody wants it to be.
Apparently, narcotics are very bad for one's long-term memory. Because this is the same drug-addled gas bag who was running off at the mouth for years on end about Bill Clinton's zipper. Just saying.
Don't need a specific allegation. All you need is the appearance of impropriety, and that's where this gets dicey, because with this roaring liberalism through our culture, what...
Just to let you know, this is bad enough as it is, but it gets a lot worse. Just fair warning.
Appears to be inappropriate in the old days was nothing.
Wait, what? In the old days, what Herb Cain was alleged to have done was nothing? Reach up under a woman's skirt, fondle her genitals, grab the back of her head and pull it toward his crotch? That's nothing? Oh, dear. We're reading from different history books, Flush and I. Because the nothing that he's talking about in the olden days would prompt people to say, and I'm just pulling out old phrases here, get a rope! And that's not even race-based. That's any cad, any poltroon who would do such a thing as Herb Cain is accused of.
I remember when Blake Edwards, he was married to Julie Andrews, he got an award during the Oscars one. This is in the last... Well, time flies. I think it's the last 10 years. And he praised his wife, Julie Andrews. He called her the best damn broad that there ever was. And the place was outraged. It was a term of endearment to him. It wasn't a put-down. It's the way Blake Edwards and he's the guy that did a Pink Panther movie. It's the way he and his buds, Peter Falk, that's the way they talked. They can't do that anymore. Can't call a woman a broad, even if it's affectionate. You can't even say, hey, baby. No, can't even do that. What the hell did Herman Cain do here?
I wish these guys would get on the same damn script, because, see, I've still got this up and running. Come on back. Come on. And maybe, well, anyway, I've still got Mike Huckstery from last night. Remember Mike Huckstery last night talking about how all them women at Popeye's in the Atlanta airport was calling him honey and sugar and darling. But Flush says that can't happen anymore.
After all the uproar over the allegations of sexual harassment by Herman Cain, I realized that I myself have been a victim of sexual harassment, and I didn't even know it. I fly through the Atlanta airport often, sometimes several days a week. Now, my favorite place for a quick meal on the go is the Popeye's Chicken in Terminal B. I like it because the food is quick and delicious, and especially I just adore the staff there because they speak the southern language that I grew up on and still understand. But in light of the Herman Cain controversy, I realize...
The southern language he grew up on and still understands? Are we talking about don't prosecute my son for beating that dog that was hanging in the tree to death? That's no southern language I recognize or understand, but you get the idea. These people are antediluvian. They are not operating in the real world. They still see women at best as objects, and women are supposed to feel, I don't know, maybe they're supposed to titter a little bit, or maybe just, you know, tap their little fingers against their clavicles and say, oh my, Mr. Cain, where are your hands going? I think I'm getting the vapors. Instead of recognizing that kind of conduct as a sort of precursor, an extension of the idea of rape. But back to the impotent pill-popping propagandist.
He goes up and says, can maybe go to dinner and answer the question? And that means that we've got a predator on our hands? Now, you know, and I know that during the 90s, and you guys who have lost your kids in custody fights, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The feminists and the feminazis went out there. There was a period of time in this country where every man and every husband was a predator by virtue of his existence alone.
Well, there is this little thing out there, Flesh, called male privilege. And it's also accompanied by white male privilege. Privilege is a stacking issue. Privilege stacks upon privilege stacks upon privilege. And in a position of power such as Herb Cain occupied, he damn sure had some privilege going for him, even if he wasn't white. He had some male privilege going on in what the law defines as an unequal employment situation. Well, you do want a job, don't you?
By virtue of just being a man, this is what the feminazis taught. And I think this is its legacy in part. It's absurd here. And everybody that goes into journalism has been treated to this in formal education. All of these alleged acts of impropriety are whatever the accuser thinks.
You know, Texas Betsy just made an observation. She said, I think Rush watches Mad Men a little too much. And I've watched that show, and it's interesting. It's damned well made. The attention to detail is stunning. But even Mad Men is a caricature of a time. Perhaps there are some accuracies in the way in the way the men behave. But even then, a person being caught in such conduct would be thought a poltroon and a cad. But no, we're still not to the worst of the flesh clip.
All you have to do is be offended by somebody. And you can be accused of sexual harassment, and the crowd will pick up the charge and start yelling it. And yet, looky, I keep going back to Gallup. And Gallup says nobody, relatively, comparatively, is paying any attention. And maybe,
if you consider nobody to be the universe occupied by teabaggers, right-wingers, and various and sundry other mouth-breathers and knuckle-walkers, in excess of half of women surveyed believe these other women. Why? Because they've lived it. Yeah.
That is because there is a majority and a large section of the country that thinks all of this is just a bunch of bogus left-wing claptrap. Efforts to control not just thoughts, but behavior and votes. And all of that. The number of people who walk around today in abject fear of being themselves would stun you a bit. And the number of people that walk around today...
Yeah, but see that... I don't know. Are you talking about the closet you live in, Rush? It would not stun me. There are tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of people leading some sort... look, we all, to one degree or another, lead a separate inner life. The problem is when that inner life is predatory and finds its way to the surface, like it did with Herb Cain, and like it does with Flush Flimball. Has anybody seen the latest Mrs. Flimball? A buddy of mine just came back from Florida and said he thought he saw her on a couple of milk cartons down there.
Afraid to tell you what they really think about something? How often does it happen to you? You're in a group of people and you want to say what you really think, but you whisper it to one person that you think you can...
God, that's the entire Republican Party. But we've discussed that in the past, haven't we?
the Republican Party says amongst itself, more or less openly now, what it had to whisper in the 1950s and 1960s. The old, unreconstructed, unrepentant racists had to sort of move quietly while the world was watching them. But with that generation passing by, now they talk it openly. It's kind of bass-ackwards, Flush, from the way you're describing it.
It's because you're afraid that there's some busybody in the group.
That's what rape victims are, busybodies. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a woman. It could be any liberal, any panty-waist liberal is going to take great offense and get holier-than-thou on you.
See the sexism? It doesn't have to be a woman. It can be any liberal. It can be any panty-waist liberal. This sick thing cannot engage or cannot put forward an argument that is not rife with his own bigotries, his own prejudices, and his own hatreds. Hey, Flush, was J. Edgar Hoover a panty waist? I mean, you know. Yeah.
Who? And start preaching to you, and who the hell wants that? Well, no, because I don't care. No, it doesn't happen to me. I don't care. That's the whole point. I don't care what people say. I don't care what they think. That's a very liberating thing. But most people
aren't
that way.
Because you've got enough money not to care.
Hell, people whisper things to me all day. I can't hear them. I'm deaf.
Oh, my God. People whisper things to me, and I can't hear them because I'm deaf. And how'd you get deaf, Flush? It's a known side effect of the abuse of prescription or non-prescription bought on the street narcotics. But, at $50 million a year, he can just sit behind the walls of that gated compound somewhere in Palm Beach, Florida. Him, the cat, the maid, Mrs. Limbaugh down in the pit somewhere. It puts the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again. And pretend that reality doesn't exist.
No, and they still won't raise their voice so I can hear it because they're afraid of what people might say when they want to comment about something going on within a group of people. That's just, I'd say the left has everybody running around in straight jackets, handcuffs, and gags. Everybody gagged.
Just can't resist that BDSM imagery, can you, Flush? Little tennis ball, little duct tape, and you're in your happy place, aren't you, buddy?
Blindfolded, you name it. That's what they want.
Rubber diving suit, maybe?
A fifth woman! Now, in a period of 2 weeks, Herman Cain's been alive how many years? 65 years, and in 2 weeks of his life, bam-o, five women from out of nowhere.
No, Flush, from out of his past, buddy. Are we supposed to be impressed with this sort of peccable, because it ain't impeccable, this peccable attempt at reasoning? Well, my friend, five people, five women have, in 2 weeks, five women, and he's 65 years old, my friend. Help me understand the mental state of the person who is persuaded or convinced by that line of reasoning. Because it ain't getting down the track for me.
When he takes a lead in the polls, I'll tell you, you women, why don't you just make it official, put on some burkas, and I'll guarantee you, nobody will touch you. You put on a burka, and everybody will leave you alone, if that's what you want.
Bless the hearts
of whomever the intern is at Media Matters for America who sat and listened through 3 hours of so-called excellence in broadcasting and does it every day to pull these clips. How do they not just walk out the door while unscrewing the liquor bottle at the same time? And nobody in the office would dare criticize them. Oh yeah, there goes Melissa. She's swigging straight out of the bottle, Fred. George, do you know what Melissa does? No, Fred. George, Melissa is the intern who sits and listens to Rush Limbaugh 5 days a week. Oh, hell, and she's just now opening the bottle? Yeah. You women, why don't you just make it official? Put on some burkas if you want everybody to leave you alone. The freight that comes with that is absolutely stunning. Because that women were killed outright for not wearing their burkas in Afghanistan and other benighted places on the planet. They are whipped. They are flogged. They are publicly humiliated for not wearing their burqa. But ha ha ha, that's all just funny. Yeah, Dave in Tennessee asked, you know, how does that drug-addled pill freak keep any female audience, any? Damn fine question. David also noting, as far as the interns are concerned, Bob, this just in, Media Matters rotates the interns. They had to do with a group of five to up the retention rate. The revolving door was beginning to spin. Well, Marty, don't complain. Marty, I'd rather hear Kane than the pig man. I know. But we have to know what these rotten... rotten, miserable things are up to. David has an ear for certain things, and with regard to the I Must Tell Jesus, you know, Herm, that's the worst effing keyboard patch I ever heard, and I've heard quite a few. Jan is offended by Limbaugh. That makes, no offense, Jan, but that makes me feel good. If you weren't, there would be something desperately wrong. Marty doesn't care much for the jambalaya at Popeye's. Apparently, Mike Huckstraby has never had that rather bland impression of what Popeye's calls jambalaya, so bland that you need lots of cayenne pepper to wake the stuff up. Either that or I'm just not a southerner. No, I'm not particularly moved by Popeye's jambalaya either. But once upon a time, they did fried chicken livers, and if you got them spicy, holy mackerel. But when it comes, you know, when it comes to Flimball, he doesn't just vomit on one group. There is nothing, there is absolutely nothing that he cannot turn, that's sick already, that he can't turn into something sicker. You may recall from last night's conversations the discussion of the breaking and continuing to unfold nightmare that is the Penn State child rape story. Today, they were supposed to have their weekly press conference dealing with the upcoming tussle against the Nebraska Cornshuckers, Penn State. It was canceled at the last moment because about a million reporters to show up showed up to wanting to ask Joe Paterno, Coach Joe Paterno, 84 years old, about how it was that he managed to just sort of slough off the fact that his defensive coordinator was having sex with little boys on the campus of Penn State and relatively under the aegis of the vaunted Penn State Nittany Lion football program. The New York Times reported earlier today that the Board of Trustees or Directors or whatever it is that Penn State has is getting closer and closer to handing Joe Paterno an apple and a roadmap, which they really should do. Remember, Joe Paterno, the graduate assistant, terrified out of his wits at what he had seen when he saw Jerry Sandusky having sex with a little boy in the football team's showers, ran straight away not to the cops, but to Joe Paterno and told him about it, and Joe Paterno picked up the phone and called the AD and the guy who's basically in charge of the business end of Penn State University, at which point Joe was done. And that, of course, was something on the order of 9 years ago. Jerry Sandusky, the accused child rapist, was on campus as recently as this past weekend working out. Now, this is the background for the following from, yes, what Malloy and Marty just referred to as the pig man. There are some stories that if you can't come down on the right side of it, you should probably just leave it the hell alone. But when you are an impotent, pill-popping propagandist, copyright Mike Stark, you've lost that good sense or that kind of judgment a long time ago. A little more of Flush Flimball, and then we're done with this bastard.
New York Times headline, Penn State said to be planning Paterno's exit amid scandal. Now, there are some crazy things about this story.
Crazy things.
Involving Jerry Sandusky.
Wait. Stop. There are some crazy things about this story. Not disgusting. Not deeply troubling. I mean, for God's sakes, on ESPN, Matt Millen, who was a defensive tackle for the Penn State Nittany Lions and played for Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky was his position coach. No jokes, please. Was on there and came apart on the set. I mean, Matt Millen bleeds blue and white if you cut him. He is Penn State to the core. And came nigh hollering on the set. He was so upset. He also sits on the board of directors of the Second Mile Foundation, which was the foundation that Jerry Sandusky allegedly used as the staging platform for the little boys he would groom to perform sexually for him. That's all pretty sick. That's all pretty horrifying. That's all pretty disgusting. That's all... I'm going to run out of words. What's the word that America's truth detector uses? What's the $50 million a year broadcaster word for kitty rape? Now remember, Flush Flimball did in fact get caught taking an illegal bottle of Viagra in someone else's name on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic, which has a rather notorious reputation for being a place where men can go and have sex with little boys. So what does Flush Flimball have to say about it?
New York Times headline, Penn State said to be planning Paterno's exit amid scandal. Now, there are some crazy things about this story involving Jerry Sandusky abusing young boys at Penn State. Paterno didn't. The media, sports media, has been after Paterno to quit, resign for 10 years. He's too old.
Yeah, that's...
Life has passed him by. Football
you getting this? You getting
by.
This? Are you getting this? This jiggling old coot is indirectly alleging that little boys were allegedly raped by Jerry Sandusky because the sporting press is trying desperately for the last 10 years or so, my friends, to find a way to get rid of Joe Paterno. Shit. I mean, that's just, I mean, huh? Under normal circumstances, you'd like to say, well, that's just the liquor talking. That's just the OxyContin talking. But that's the way this predatory freak thinks all the way down to the undersides of his internally hairy little toenails.
Funny, Duddy. He's 84 years old. Got no business coaching football. Got no business being around college-age football players. He can't relate to them. What the hell does he know about them? He's got to get out. This has been a refrain in the sports media for years. But Paterno hangs in there. And Joe Paterno, up until now, has had something that very few people in this country die with, and that's an impeccable reputation. But that's now gone, and the media is going to see to it. And this...
Wait a minute! He was going to die with an impeccable reputation, and that's now gone, and the media are going to see to it? You mean Jerry Sandusky didn't see to it when he was stooping little boys in the showers of the Penn State University football facilities? These are the daggum Republicans who spend so much time telling you and me that we have to take personal responsibility for our lives. Now, I don't know how Joe Paterno votes, and I don't much care. And I'm certainly not alleging that he was in there with Sandusky. What he did was have a massive failure of conscience. As Dave Zirin noted, he put the money-making behemoth that is Penn State University football ahead of the sanctity of the bodies of little boys. That's what he did. But not in the drug-addled mind of a man who is paid $50 million a year to spew this bilious, vomitous garbage across the airwaves that you own. You have to pay to have some sort of internet service. But if you've got a basic radio, you can turn it on from noon to 3 Eastern time, Monday through Friday, because it accesses airwaves that you own. And in practically every community in the entire United States, between those hours of noon and 3, the air, some portion, some small bit of the AM radio spectrum is going to be controlled by this guy. Pumping filth into the air like some Superfund site hiding in a bag of skin.
It's all part of a nation in decline. Joe Paterno's tenure, coach of the Penn State football team, will soon be over, perhaps within days or weeks, in the wake of a sex abuse scandal that has implicated university officials, according to two people briefed on conversations among the university's top officials. The Board of Trustees has yet to determine the precise timing of Paterno's exit, but it is clear that the man who has more victories than any other coach at college football's top level and who made Penn State a prestigious national brand will not survive to coach another season. Discussions about how to manage his departure have begun, according to the two unnamed people. Paterno was to have held a news conference today, but the university canceled it less than an hour before it was scheduled to start. At age 84 and with 46 seasons as the Penn State head coach behind it, Paterno's extraordinary run, one that produced tens of millions of dollars for the Scruel and two national championships, and that established him as one of the nation's most revered leaders, will end with a stunning and humiliating final chapter. As the media smiles. Jerry Sandusky.
Now, just a damn minute. As the media, and it's media smile, you damned idiot, not as the media smiles. Media is a plural word. The singular is medium. For $50 million a year, I would think somebody could have gotten it through the gelatinous gray sloshings between your ears that pass for drug-addled brains. The media smile. But where's the data? Where's the proof? Do you have a story in the stack there, Flush? Of someone whooping it up and saying, oh, goody, Paterno's gone. He's been out of touch with the game for 10 or 15 years now. And it's just a damned fine thing that Jerry Sandusky was allegedly stooping little boys in the Penn State football facility showers so that we could finally use that as the lever by which to eject Joe Paterno. Of course, there is none. Because, as is the case with all right-wing radio, it's fantasy. It's made up. It's bull. But I'm carrying coals to Newcastle at this point because you know that.
Former defensive coordinator under Paterno has been charged with sexually abusing 8 boys over a 15-year period. Paterno has been widely criticized for failing to involve the cops when he learned of an allegation of one assault of a young boy in 2002. Additionally, two top university officials, Gary Schultz, the senior vice president for finance and business, and Tim Curley, the AD, were charged with perjury and failure to report to authorities what they...
And see, this is the only factual part of anything that this freak says, because he's actually reading someone else's work. He's reading the New York Times story. But his little mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers can't tell the difference when he stops reading and starts bloviating.
...of the allegations as required by state law. Since Sandusky's arrest Saturday, Penn State, notably its president Graham Spanier, and Paterno have come under withering criticism for a failure to act adequately after learning at different points over the years that Sandusky might have been abusing children. Newspapers have called for their resignations. Prosecutors have suggested their inaction led to more children being harmed by Sandusky. Students and faculty at the university have expressed a mix of disgust and confusion and a hope that much of what prosecutors have charged isn't true. On Monday, yesterday, law enforcement officials said that Joe Paterno had met his legal obligation in alerting his superiors at the university when he learned of the 2002 allegation against Sandusky, but they suggested that he might well have failed a moral test for what to do when confronted with such a disturbing allegation involving a child not even in his teens. No one at the university alerted the cops or pursued the matter to determine the well-being of the child involved. The identity of the child remains unknown, according to the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. Paterno has not been charged in the matter, but his failure to report to authorities what he knew about the 2002 incident, in which Sandusky allegedly sexually assaulted a young boy at Penn State's football complex, has become a flashpoint, stirring anger among the board members and an outpouring of public criticism about his handling of the matter. Now, what happened here?
Okay, here comes the opinionated.
Graduate assistant or assistant coach, student, whatever, witnessed Sandusky abusing, having sex with a young kid, don't know how old, in the Penn State locker room. He went and told his dad. His dad then told Paterno, and then Paterno told authorities at the university, which is what he was supposed to do. The problem here is that the witness didn't stop it. Everybody is up in arms over the witness didn't do anything to stop it in the process. Saw it, ran out of there and started telling his dad. His dad said, okay, we're going to tell Paterno, but nobody stopped Sandusky when he was in the act. And that's got people a little worried. And then that happened sometime ago. Sandusky was still allowed to use the football facilities. After that, when everybody knew, that's the problem. That is those two events, that Sandusky wasn't stopped, and that people knew about it, and then Sandusky years later...
Trust me, please. I'm not playing this just because I... No. I want you to hear the takeaway. I want you to hear the takeaway that comes from the spokesman for America's right wing. But the takeaway doesn't really work if you don't hear what's in front of it.
Still in the football facilities. Well, everybody knew what he was doing. I don't know if you can.
Now we are 5-6 minutes into this clip, and I want you to pay attention to this. I want you to note something. At no point in this 6 minutes has he, in any wise, condemned full-grown men using their positions of power to have sex with defenseless little boys. Did I miss something? I've heard this clip before, and I didn't hear it. Did you hear it? Has he at any time during this clip condemned not Jerry Sandusky specifically, because he is charged and not convicted, but on general principle, has Flush Flimball condemned the practice of full-grown men raping little boys? You see, I'm not playing these two clips, the Kane clip and this clip, back-to-back, because they're long clips. I'm not playing them back-to-back just for the hell of it, because this is Twisted Tuesday, and I'm just going to kill some time by playing some Rush Limbaugh clips. From where Flush Flimball stands, it's all the same thing. Powerful men do things to people less powerful than them, and it's okay, because the power is what makes it okay. See?
Put things in an order of worst here, but that certainly, if you did, would be at or near the top. Now, Paterno didn't what they're saying is that Paterno should have banished Sandusky, should have not allowed him anywhere near the place after learning what he learned, should have gone to the cops, should have done a whole bunch of stuff, should have turned Sandusky in, should have shot him, should have done something, whatever.
Do you hear how he works the hyperbole for his little mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners?
I should have called the cops, should have turned him in, should have shot him, should have done something.
Now, has anybody suggested that Joe Paterno should have gone and gunned down Jerry Sandusky? No. That's something that exists only in the fetid and otherwise socio-psychopathic reaches of Flesh Flemball's drug-addled brain. And understand, get this all the way down to the ground. I'm not lecturing, I just want to make sure that the point is clear. That there are something on the order of a couple of million, if not more, American citizens who agree with everything that has thus far been said by this evil, evil, evil man. And that tells you something about America. I'm not going to use examples from any other culture or any other historic epoch, but we know that it has happened in the past where evil was spoken and a significant portion of a population said, yeah, that's right. And it is alive in America today.
And they've been gunning for Joe Paterno for years. Assorted alumni, media, and what have you, simply because of his age. So it looks like...
And see, he can't resist. He can't go anywhere. He can't cover any topic. He cannot discuss any subject without resort to eliminationist rhetoric. The media has been gunning for Joe Paterno for gunning? Really? Gunning? Joe Paterno should have shot Jerry Sandusky. Really, Flush?
Joe Paterno, who up until all of this had just an impeccable reputation, is going to be forced out, if this New York Times story is correct, is going to be forced out of Penn State with none of that intact. Which... sad to say, there are several in our culture, several people are love to just tear people down. No.
Who, Flush? Cite them. Name them. Not by generalities, but by specifics. Name them.
Just destroy them. It's a fact of life in our culture because impeccable people or impeccably reputed people make everybody else look bad. So... if we can make everybody look like a reprobate, it's not so bad to be a reprobate.
What? I think here at about the 7-minute mark in this clip, the drugs are beginning to kick in for him. If we can make everybody look like a reprobate, then it's not so bad to be a reprobate. Who's the reprobate in this story? Now, I'm struggling mightily not to raise my voice and not to scream because it makes Agnes upset and she's afraid there's something wrong with poor Bob back in the studio. Bob, why were you screaming tonight? You know, that's not good for you. If everybody's a reprobate, then it's not so bad to be a reprobate. And yet still, 7 minutes and 18 seconds into this clip, he cannot bring himself to even hypothetically or theoretically criticize the man who was raping little boys. Much more of this, I'm going to take my shoe off and start beating on the desk like Khrushchev at the UN. Is this really how America's right wing processes information? That the story of little boys being buggered by Joe Paterno's right-hand man somehow turns into the story of the victimization of Joe Paterno? You know what? I'd love to figure out a way to get some right-wingers on board with this, just out in the open. I'd like to know if Mitch McConnell feels this way. I'd like to know if John Boehner is down with this. I'd like to know if Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey is on board with Flush Flimball's version of events. Let's ask the trolls in the Repiglican presidential field. Let's ask Herb Cain. Let's ask Willard Romney. Let's ask Newt Gingrich. Let's ask Michelle Bachmann. Let's ask free market, no regulations, Ron Paul. Let's ask Rick Mann on Dog Santorum. I want to know, don't you? Because this is the man who sets policy, who sets the agenda every day for the right wing in America. And we ain't even got to the bad part yet.
If everybody looks like a scumbag, then it's not so bad to be a scumbag. And it's called, like Moynihan had a name for it, defining deviancy down. That was in regards to pursuing crime. Our culture finally over the years has decided at different levels of crime, you know what, we can't catch them all, to hell with it. We're calling a misdemeanor to hell with it. And so what used to be abhorrent criminal behavior is now misdemeanor, everybody does it. Not that big a deal. We got to move on to other things.
Wait a minute. The left wants everybody to believe that people with impeccable reputations are scumbags. You know, oh, he's got me. I get up every morning, and that's what I... You know, what can I do today to make people with impeccable reputations look like scumbags? And yet, 7 minutes and 54 seconds in, still no criticism of the guy who was raping the little boys. Who's the scumbag here, Rush? God bless America. David in Tennessee noting, Flush, there's a Republican prosecutor on that defensive coach's trail with facts, Flush. Facts. Joe, by his own admission, did the minimum under the law. There is legal obligation and there is moral obligation. Joe Paterno's personal power in the eye of the whole state carries more weight than all the functionaries accusing the offended coach combined. Had Joe said maybe 10 words to the cops, all this, all of it, would have stopped cold 9 years ago. And I'll add, and some more little boys wouldn't have been raped. That's the facts, Jack. But then again, David notes, Flush has an echo chamber in his own head. If he says it now, 7 minutes later, he cites what he heard earlier as the best available truth. This is what you're dealing with when you're dealing with a Republican. Because most every Republican, oh, I listen to Rush. Yeah, he's great American. And yes, Marty, he did say scruel instead of school. That's one of those cute little pieces of slimy shtick that he's been using for the past 30 years. He started using that back when he was, and maybe this is part of the reason, you know, he was a disc jockey in Pennsylvania before he was ever America's truth detector. And I have heard time and again that back when he was disc jockey Jeff Christie in Pittsburgh, that he was busted for trying to pick up men in the University District of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And that's why he sort of tottered away from the Pittsburgh market. That, by God, is America's truth detector. Self-appointed and self-nominated. And that's just the starting point. By the way, it is now the top of the hour. It's 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. And I am pleased to announce to you that we have apparently dodged a bullet here on the planet. 6:28 p.m. Eastern Time, an asteroid passed within 202,000 miles of planet Earth, according to NASA. It was a non-story story. It was the closest approach to Earth of an object this big in over 30 years. But that didn't stop the Johnny-on-the-spot for-profit media from trying to get a little scare mileage out of it. Oh, no. God forbid.
Tuesday's close encounter with an asteroid brings flashbacks of the movie Armageddon. The course of the 2005 U-55 asteroid brings it slightly closer to our planet than the moon. That's the closest encounter the Earth has had with a space rock in three decades. But no need to panic. NASA says the 400-meter-wide asteroid is not on a collision course with our planet.
Absolutely. We are 100% sure that it's not going to hit us.
But if one did crash into Earth, experts say it could wipe out an entire country, or if it fell into the ocean, could cause a 70-foot-high tsunami. So scientists say we need to be prepared, even though the chances of a collision are rare.
Well, I don't think we need to panic because these things happen on huge geological timescales. The frequency is, you know, probably once every few hundred thousand years. But there's no guarantee it won't happen in the next 10, 20, 30 years.
While scientists say an asteroid hitting Earth is not an out-of-this-world scenario, blowing up a space rock with nuclear weapons is pure science fiction. Real scientists say...
What the... There's your for-profit media.
That is a CNN report. No kidding. Made up primarily by video clips of movies like Armageddon and... was that the Bruce Willis vehicle with the... oh, I don't know. Oh. What the hell are they teaching in journalism school now? Now? I'm not trying to be cranky just to be cranky, but really. That was a whole story that wasn't a story. An asteroid is not going to hit planet Earth. But if it did, ooh! Well, at least we dodged this one. Let's take a little break. It is Tuesday, and therefore the Green News Report is on its way. That's, of course, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. November is shaping up to be even thinner than October. I don't even like to think about that, what that means for December. Or, for that matter, for the ongoing future of the Horn. But it is. If you'd like to help out, there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Under the tab Contribute, there is also there is the snail mail address. Any help you can send would be much appreciated. Any help. So we'll come back and open the lines. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, on your nickel. 304-658-3333, that saves us the toll charges and keeps the bill down a little bit way. And email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. So we'll be back, light them up, and here comes
the Green News Report. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, November 8th, 2011.
What do we want?
Climate justice!
Where do we want it?
Now!
Massive protest at the White House against massive pipeline across the country.
An earthquake right now. Our lights shaking quite a bit here as another earthquake has just hit.
Record Oklahoma earthquakes rattle the heart of fracking country. Record spike in global carbon emissions. It's official. 2011 breaks the record for the most weather disasters. Plus, massive crack discovered in a major glacier in Antarctica.
It's a massive record day. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for six massive record minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I have always despised the jackbooted Birkenstocks over at the EPA. Ever since it was created by that bleeding heart liberal Richard Nixon.
Talk it to him, Stephen. This is your Green News Report.
Get a haircut, hippie.
Okay, Des, it's a big news day. The natives are getting restless about the massive Keystone XL pipeline and whether Barack Obama is going to approve its construction.
Yes, an estimated 10 to 12,000 protesters encircled the White House on Sunday, demanding that President Obama deny approval for a new oil pipeline from Canada. If approved, the $7 billion proposed Keystone XL pipeline would carry dirty oil from the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, 1,700 miles across the rivers and aquifers of the Midwest to refineries in Texas. Supporters say the pipeline would create jobs, but critics counter those jobs would only be temporary, and they point to the risk to the environment in the short term from spills and the long-term risk of climate change from burning more oil.
These protests are really getting huge as this decision has been now put off temporarily by the State Department?
Yes, the State Department Inspector General has now launched an investigation into the handling of the approval process for this Keystone XL pipeline after reports emerged of multiple conflicts of interest with the company running the environmental impact studies. President Obama has said he will be the decider on the pipeline, but this investigation may delay that decision until after the presidential election.
In short, the companies were actually working with the State Department and may have been encouraging the State Department to accept the approval of this license. Interestingly enough, the Republicans in Congress are not investigating at all, are they?
No, they are not. It's the biggest spike ever in carbon dioxide emissions. The Associated Press reports that global emissions of greenhouse gases in 2010 jumped by the biggest amount ever on record, according to new data released by the U.S. Department of Energy.
Great!
More than half of that increase in emissions comes from just two countries, China and the U.S.
Oh, I thought you were going to say comes from Rush Limbaugh, but press on.
One of the consequences of ever-increasing emissions is already coming true. More frequent, extreme, and intense weather events. From the catastrophic flooding and killer tornadoes in the Midwest, to the record drought in Texas, to the freak Halloween snowstorm in the Northeast, the U.S. has now seen 14 weather disasters costing more than $1 billion in 2011, making 2011 the record $4 billion weather disasters. That 14 is almost double the previous record of 9 disasters set back in 2008, and the year ain't over yet. Meanwhile, things are warming up down in Antarctica.
When looking out of the window of the aircraft, we noticed a fairly large crack in the ice shell.
NASA scientists have confirmed that a massive new crack is forming in one of Antarctica's largest glaciers, the Pine Island Glacier. According to NASA scientists performing aerial surveys, the crack formed in just the last 6 weeks.
And what are the consequences if this glacier breaks off?
Well, it can affect shipping if it's as big as they think it will be, 300 square miles, the size of New York City, and it will raise sea levels nearby.
I'll get out my swimming suit.
Earthquakes in Oklahoma.
The house literally shook and shuddered. And we could see dust flying from the walls.
Oklahoma was hit by 23 earthquakes in 48 hours over the weekend, the largest measuring 5.6 on the Richter scale, the biggest ever recorded in the state. No major damage or injuries were reported, and a U.S. Geological Survey spokesman says they are still sorting out just what happened.
North America is on its own plate, and Oklahoma is in the middle of that. So we're just trying to figure out what's going on in the middle of North America. It's not like somewhere in California.
Yeah, what's going on here? We've got earthquakes in Washington, D.C., now in Oklahoma. What's this all about?
Well, seismologists are already investigating whether the controversial natural gas drilling technique of fracking might be a contributing factor in these earthquakes. Fracking, short for hydraulic fracturing, is a drilling technique that pushes millions of gallons of fresh water and toxic chemicals under high pressure deep underground, fracturing the rock. Fracking has been implicated in earthquakes in England already. Plus, an as-yet unpublished U.S. Geological Survey study reportedly links fracking and earthquakes in a different region of Oklahoma. But seismologists say right now it's still too early to tell if the weekend Oklahoma earthquakes are related to fracking.
Yeah, can't be. I saw an ExxonMobil commercial. They said fracking was perfectly safe. For more on all of these stories and those that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyle.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I feel the earth.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
17 past the hour on this Twisted Tuesday. And I think you have to agree, it's pretty doggone twisted at this point. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Thank you very kindly. 10 slots in the Thrifty 250 just got filled. We had 2.5 slots filled last night. It all matters. Bills, you know, bills. Because having passed the 6th birthday of the Horn, I now have this overarching urge for there to someday be a 10th birthday of the Horn. Not that I'm getting ahead of myself on years 7, 8, and 9 or anything. But, no, you get the idea. Quick email before we go to the phones. Lines open if you want to jump in. It is much easier to have a meaningful conversation if it's not happening, you know, in the last few minutes of the program. So if you've got something to say, by all means, jump in. You know, I was this is not bragging or anything, but I was on a little... I was on a radio show this afternoon that comes out of Huntington, West Virginia. They've actually, get this, I know, you're going to go, what? There is a liberal progressive radio station in Huntington, West Virginia. And a really, really nice fella by the name of Bobby Nelson hosts the program in the afternoon. And I was on there to talk about the fact that we're going to visit the inauguration this Sunday of Earl Ray Tomlin and let him know that we don't appreciate him treating science like trash, especially when it's the science that proves that his buddies in the coal industry are killing us. Just in case you were wondering, the insanity in Mississippi is rolling on. There's no real reason to talk about that ballot initiative today because the polls are still open, but yes, the lieutenant governor of Mississippi has said that little children will be marched into the ovens.
by opponents of the Personhood Amendment. I guess that includes the Bishop of Jackson, Mississippi. Well, you know. Jesus. And a little something-something, just going back to Herb Cain for one second. I just got this webpage. I just got this link from Sandra. It is literally from the HermanCainPack.com website. It is a picture of Karen Krischer, one of Herb Cain's accusers. Headline, Herman Cain accuser Karen Krischer works for Obama and she's ugly. It's a photograph of the lady standing next to her horse with a big, beautiful smile on her face. And the caption to the photo says, ew, gross, who the hell does this ugly bitch think she's fooling? Like I said, it's a picture of Karen, Ms. Krischer, and her horse. And it's and the photo continues, just to be clear, Karen Krischer is the one on the left. Haw, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny, because the other one's a horse. Well, the one on the right's the horse. Oh, dang, who says us right-wingers don't have a sense of humor? Dang, that's funny. Yeah, this is on the website of the Herman Cain Pack. Responses, LOLOL. True and true. This is the woman who accused Cain? Yeah, as Sandra noted, somebody better get a... somebody better get some screenshots and save this thing. Now, an email rolled in just a little bit ago from our buddy Andy. Common theme with Rush, Papa Joe, Herman Cain, Mr. Obama. Bob, I see a common theme. Power should never be questioned, no matter how heinous the transgression, how much proof, or how many facts corroborate the media's narrative. The right-wing media megaphone is set up to defend power, to protect the powerful icon. Note how Fox fraudster Mike Huckabee goes to the aid of Herman Cain to obfuscate the truth. He downplays the fate of the victims placed in precarious positions by their masters. You hear Rush totally disregard the innocent, but go to the direct aid of the powerful that could have protected the innocent from the transgression. The victim of the transgression is never mentioned, never given sympathy, and never given empathy. I totally agree. The weak, the downtrodden, the common citizen deserves whatever they got. The rights and sympathy lie only with the powerful. Herman Cain and Papa Joe cannot be questioned because they are right, because they hold the power, never to be questioned by press. In the conservative world, the press has no right, no duty to society to indict the powerful. The press is one of the few outlets the lessers have to get justice from their betters, so it is maligned, therefore, by the right wing. He notes, I forgot, I included Mr. Obama because just try to question or criticize him, and the Obama supporters will come out of the woodwork. If you find flaws in his policies, the apologizers will attack the protagonist or press with a vengeance. It's all about protecting the power structure. A lot of jobs depend on it. You can believe almost anything if your job depends on it. Yeah, what is that? It's hard to get somebody to believe something when his paycheck depends on him not believing it. Yeah. I always think of Judy Bonds when I think of that phrase because it sounded so earnest when she said it and so true and because it is. But anyway, I was on the radio this afternoon, station in Huntington. It's liberal, it's progressive. We talked about occupying the inauguration, so to speak. But he was kind enough to let me tell him about the horn. And so who knows, maybe there's a new listener out there. It would be lovely if there is. And I hope they're enjoying it, because I tried to make it sort of indirectly clear that right-wingers are not welcome. But the word continues to get out here and there. And just remember, you never know who's going to hear you or when. 24 past the hour and time to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well, I tell you what. You know what? I've been watching this for the last couple of weeks, and I'm still trying to figure out which one's the best one. I still think the best one that I figured out watching this still has to be the Pokemon speech.
The Pokemon speech?
Yeah. Did you not hear this? This is over on Rachel Maddow, where one of the debates at the end, you know, they were given a couple of minutes to make a statement. And Herman Cain came up and read this thing, said, as the poet said, and did it, and went through this thing. You know where he got?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes.
The movie.
Yeah, right. It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, when you hear that, it's just sort of like, it's like you said, this is, you're just expecting Action Christer to speak.
Yeah, I did see that earlier today, but I didn't make the immediate connection. Yes, the Pokemon.
Oh. But you know what I mean? You're just sitting there going, you know, this is beyond stupid. I mean,
that's the vast intellectual rigor of the right wing quoting Pokemon.
I'm expecting him to go up to the microphone one day and go, I'm Batman. Who knows what's next with him? I mean, Lordy B. I was thinking, you know, if they ever do the movie, you know who this is set up for?
Eddie Murphy?
Oh, Samuel L. Jackson.
Really? Okay. See, I was thinking Eddie Murphy. But yeah, Samuel Jackson could work.
Get these planes off this plane.
Yeah.
I just have that image. I'm sorry. It's just the twisted part of my mind. I'm so very sorry. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, you know, gang, when you have one, it's okay. Two, you know, it might be something going on. But when you're up to, what is it now, five, or are we up to six yet?
No, I think we're at five.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is actually what they do call a pattern. You know, and apparently from what they're saying, they're all pretty similar. You know what I mean? Not exactly, but you know. And it's just sort of like, guys, it is the old saying, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire somewhere underneath all this crap. You know, I mean, there's something going on. I mean, you know, we may never all know the answer because I'm sure the Restaurant Association will sit on their hands.
Well, you know, this latest story where he was making advances at the one woman and the other two women came over to sort of provide support and make sure that nothing improper happened. It's the classic Repiglik and denouement, Luke, because while he wasn't able to make any sexual advances, he ordered a pair of $200 bottles of wine and then stiffed the women for them.
I know that's real class there, boy. I tell you, you know. It's like, Herman, if you want to spend a couple hundred, $400 getting yourself out of this with a couple of bottles of wine, good. Pay for it, you idiot. Oh, cheap bastard.
Right. I mean, it's bad enough that he's a, sexual predator, but he's a cheap one too.
I know.
But then again, you know, your fellow Tennessean David notes, compared to that drivel from the Karate Kid it's freaking Proust or Nietzsche at that point, quoting Pokemon.
Well, you know, you were talking about that. You saw the other story going on this week was the one about the American Family Council giving an award to the deadbeat dad.
Oh, that was beautiful, wasn't it?
I mean,
the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. David, what's his name?
There he is.
Oh, Norman. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't the Family Association. It was that other bunch led by Norman Bates. No,
I thought it was the one with
Tony Perkins.
Yeah, whichever group that is. I mean, they're interchangeable.
Yeah, the guys. How much in hock to his wife for child support?
110.
Yeah, 110 on the large side, and gets a basically Dad of the Year award.
Well, then they had the other one going on this weekend. Do you see the thing with, it was on one of the news magazines, where they were interviewing, guess who's out of jail? Mr. Abramoff.
Yes, Jack Abramoff, and I didn't even know you could do that to Abram.
I know. And the thing is, they started going through, by the way, it's cheap this week, yes. They were talking about the fact that, you know, Ralph Reed and the others, nobody else went to jail, but they're still out there doing the exact same con. Pretty much, you know, talking about how, you know, with Abramoff, he was talking about, said, no, I ain't going to change. Said, as long as the law's like this, I'm going to play the law. I mean, he essentially said, as long as this is a system, I'm going to play the system. And I would say, he ain't a damn bit ashamed of it. He was just talking about how, you know, that they were asking, you know, I think Diane Sawyer, I think it's who it was interviewing him. And essentially asked him if he was going to change. And he said, no. I mean, apparently this is the week, I guess you'd call it, what is this weekend? Football weekend? like, what if you got pictures of me doing it? I'm still going to do it, you know.
Right, and I'm going to swear I didn't.
Yeah. I don't care how much hours of videotape you got me doing it. I don't care. It's like, Lordy B. But, it's just one of those things. Sit here, and if it was one thing, you get away. But, I mean, here you are. Like I say, here this weekend, here's like three or four things. Just one right after the other. You know, here you have Jack Abramoff. Here you have the deadbeat dad. Here you have Herman.
And meanwhile, Rick Perry's going. And meanwhile, Rick Perry's playing his Jerry Clower albums backwards, going, somebody getting some relief, and it's me.
Well, the thing of that is, though, I'm just waiting for the full court press from Herman, where he's trying to figure out who he wants to blame more. Is it Rick Perry or is it Mitt? Which one's actually behind this?
And you know, in that
bouncing back and forth.
And that's a tough call because the easy call is to say that it's the guy who had a weekend getaway called N-Head.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, however, Willard Romney is so slippery and sleazy and grimy and greasy that it's that kind of shiv in the night kind of thing that, yeah.
You know, that is, we've all laughed at the magic underwear. It may actually be working, you know.
But me, I tend to lean toward Perry on this one, Luke, because
oh, I do too.
Especially after the
this is laughing his head off.
The lunatic cornerstone speech where he said, "I love Herman."
I'm still wondering why we still can't hear one word about this thing. Is like, was he drunk? Was he on medication? What was it? Because he was doing something. I don't know what it was. There was low oxygen in the room or what? But that speech he gave, you were just waiting for the guys to come out with the tasers and take him down. Because, I mean, he was just about ready to start getting up on the table and talk to people. That one where, you know, where he sounded like he was just downright, it sounded like he was just liquored up.
You know, I saw pills. I looked at it and I saw pills.
I did too, because I didn't think he was that much out of floppy out of control. You know what I mean? If you're drunk, you'd be more, you know, see more out of control.
Well, I mean, we all.
Like he was still just barely there.
All of us of a certain age are well acquainted with the Foster Brooks routine on the Dean Martin Celebrity Roasts, and you know, I mean, that, because Foster Brooks did a spot on A++. Drunk,
mm-hmm.
And that wasn't where Perry was.
No, he was sort of disconnected. I guess you'd call it more or less.
Yeah, that really did. That looked like Better Living Through Chemistry.
And I'm sure he does that too often as not down in Texas. But you know, it's just amazing with some of this stuff that you know, and like we said, you know, the thing a minute ago where I was talking about the all this, and amazing how the story about the campaign contribution on the Herman Cain thing is going totally unreported for the most part.
Well, and the whole Koch brother from another mother thing.
Oh, God. Well, I'm just sitting there going, that also came from somewhere else, too, I think. Oh, God, where was it? If you get a chance to go back and find that thing with Diane Sawyer, who was it? Somebody just covered it this week. Oh, it was Rachel Maddow. She had it a couple of days ago, Thursday or Friday. And she went through a couple of things he's been through, and as she said, he's a performance artist. I mean, this is a comedy routine. I mean, it's just sort of like, Lordy B. I mean, it's just sort of like, you know, you just wait to see, you know, somebody open the curtain, I want to see who's back here pulling the strings. This has got to be good. You know, because somebody's doing this. I mean, you know, I'm wondering if Jebby's behind the scenes pulling strings.
And that's the fun. That's the fun part of this. There are so many usual suspects in need of the roundup on this.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, apparently poor old Carl's been out there talking his head off, but no one's paying attention to him either. You know, and some of the other power, as you say, the power brokers and the people behind the scenes are talking, but nobody's really paying attention to him. It's like you guys ain't even funny anymore. You got the A-listers up there. They're really knocking it out of the park. I mean, Lordy B, and then every once in a while when you need a break, if you have to go back to the regular crazy, there's Michelle Bachmann standing by in the wings.
Who endorsed, by the way, in the last couple of days, who endorsed Pastor Hagee indirectly. I don't know if you saw this or not, but...
No, but it sounds like her.
Yeah, she said, our nation needs to stop doing for people what they can and should do for themselves. Self-reliance means if anyone will not work, neither should he eat.
Yeah, I like that. Somebody today I heard talking about that. Okay, well, what does that do for people who are paraplegic or quadriplegic? We just let them starve?
Well, that or do postcards with the pen in their mouth or something.
Yeah,
right. Everybody got to work. Everybody got to work. Arbeit macht frei, baby.
Well, Bud, I'm going to, how's everything? Just for a minute, folks, I apologize for what I'm going to do now. Excuse me for about 3-4 minutes. How's football going?
Not so well.
Well, I mean, did y'all get welcomed in now to the new conference?
Oh, yeah, we're going to go play in the Big 12. I guess I've gone to my last Mountaineer road game.
We saw ours. We're getting Mizzou in the East.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. But no, I mean, frankly, this whole Paterno thing, Luke, has me rethinking the way, you know, whether or not I have any business giving my, and I got to do something to relax here. That's the honest truth.
Well, the thing about that.
But I'm rethinking whether or not I ought to be spending my Saturdays, relaxing with college football as much as I enjoy it, because, you know, it's not just the Paterno, the Sandusky Paterno scandal. The whole process is filthy. There's none of it that's not dirty. And every last bit of it will sublimate any level of decency on planet Earth in the name of the money that big-time college athletics and primarily football generates. Whether it's remember how shocked we were a couple of months back when that really sleazy story broke out of Miami?
Oh, yeah.
But by the same token, we all kind of said, well, yeah, but that's Miami, and Miami does that.
They're doing that. That's just Miami.
Or, you know, going back a half a generation to SMU and the death penalty and everything in between, pay for play, and last year the story of Cam Newton's daddy pimping him all over the Southeastern Conference.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like you say. I'm sticking with it for right now because it's still my relaxation, but there are some parts of it you're just kind of going, guys, really?
I mean, well, and see, I've got an especial problem with my alma mater, you know, Harvard on the Mon, WVU, because that ever since, you know, and it started with the beginning of the season, they've got this new tradition where they all Mountaineer players, most of whom come from nowhere near West Virginia and have absolutely nothing to do with so-called coal culture, or for that matter, our longer and deeper Appalachian culture generally. They all have to touch a 350-pound lump of coal that came out of the upper Big Branch mine and is metaphorically soaked in the blood of 29 miners. And they're rubbing on it for good luck, Luke.
I know.
And it's, I mean, you know, we picked up our third loss, bless his heart, our good buddy Corey there in Louisville. Louisville handed us our butts. And Corey kicked in a contribution by way of apology. He said, "Honest Bob, I never thought the Cardinals would score that many points."
Well, you know how it is. It's one of those things that, of course, you know how it is. I'm just waiting to see. I haven't seen the numbers. I'm sure they probably were out yesterday, but I ain't paid attention. I'm sure the numbers for Saturday's game just had to blow the cable numbers off the wall. For the game, the big game.
Oh, and, well, you know, I saw some of that down in Kentucky, and dadgummit, it was, you know, electioneering down in Kentucky way, and there were so many filthy right-wing Republican sleazy attack ads on, they didn't even have any time during that game for some beer commercials.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
We can't have that. Especially in Kentucky, my Lord. If you don't have a beer commercial on every 30 seconds, or every 5 minutes, what's going on in the world?
Steve Beshear puts the blood of babies on his cornflakes every morning. How can you vote for a monster like that? You know, Jesus.
I say, I'm just so happy the vote's today because I don't have to come home every day and hit the machine and hear 3 or 4 people call up, tell me who I should be voting for.
Oh, y'all, you've been getting robocalled?
Not too many, but a few. You know what I mean? It's just sort of like about every day. It's like one, maybe two.
Well, I'm trying to think of where it was. It may have been Ohio where they were robocalling. Yeah, it was Ohio on issue 2, which is of course.
Oh yeah.
the anti-labor, anti-collective bargaining thing, which we hope will go down in flames. The robocalls were going out all day yesterday to Ohio voters, telling them to go to the polls Wednesday to vote on it.
Oh, dear.
How is that, Luke? How is that not just a massive crime that anybody who even contemplates it winds up in prison for a long time, making little bitty rocks out of great big rocks?
I mean, it's got to be fraud. I mean, you know, when you're sitting there trying to prevent people from voting by trying to get them to vote on the wrong day. I mean.
And I saw a story out of Ohio today where somebody got their nose bitten trying to vote. And not by a dog or a weasel or anything. Well, okay, maybe a weasel. But, yeah, and...
Mm-hmm. I had trouble last week, and I didn't get to go early vote, so that's where I just came from before I called. I just had to go to do my voting. But like I say, unfortunately, I'm just in the county, so we just had one or two things on the ballot. We don't have our mayor's races this time around in the city. But I don't have to vote in that, hallelujah. Last time I moved just into the edge of the county. So
yeah, and what story did I see the other day? Your lieutenant governor in Tennessee is, I mean, crazy. I mean, like,
hey, we're growing good here, I tell you.
Now with extra crazy. Oh, what was the story? It was one of those that really elicited a little scream from me, Luke. But what's his last name? Ramsey or something, or. Yeah.
Well, they're such a nice cast of characters. I mean, Lordy B. You know, it's like, and the thing is, if one of them quits, they have one that they put in place that you wouldn't notice the difference. That maybe his hair cuts to the other side. It's like, no! But, no, like I say, sometimes on our local, I've just given up on some of that. It's like, guys, can we come out and play in the real world, you know, where people breathe? I mean, you know, it's like, what are you people doing? But no, the thing that got me on the Sandusky thing you talked about Joe Pa, was apparently Joe Pa did the right thing at the beginning. He apparently called, you know, whoever it was he was supposed to call and report it and all this stuff. And the thing.
Well, except the call the cops part, Luke.
Well, I mean, I understand there's probably a procedure. You know, I mean, he has to report it to his superiors or whatever. And I accept that. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure they have their
own. Well,
But I'm sitting there going, okay, I can see that at the beginning, but if I don't see something in the paper in the next 2 weeks, then I'm calling the cops. I mean, I would give the university their chance to do it the right way. You know, play by the rules, you know, whatever their procedure is. But if I don't see something in the next 2 weeks, somebody better be calling me, tell me why there's nothing showing up. Or why somebody hadn't come down and locked up his office.
Yeah, and the other side of that is, you know, the idea of Joe Paterno calling his superior at Penn State. The only superior Joe Paterno has at Penn State lives invisibly inside the Penn State prayer chapel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joe Paterno is the most powerful man at Penn State, no doubt about it.
Well, I mean, he's what Bear was at Alabama. You know, like I say, when Bear was alive, nothing happened to Alabama that didn't run through Bear somehow.
You know, I don't even know if Bear
it would be sent through. You know, Bear would know about it.
I don't even know if Bear had that kind of power, Luke. Honest to God, I don't.
Well, I don't know if he did for the whole university, but for the football team, he did.
Yeah, but I mean, but Paterno is Penn State. Paterno is the economy of State College, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And Dave Zirin, you know, did just a magnificent job explaining all of that in his article that I saw yesterday. Our buddy John sent it along. And, I mean, that's the truth. At that, when you're Joe, there's a little more that attaches. I mean, if somebody comes I'm not trying to draw this line directly, but if somebody comes to the Pope and says, I saw Cardinal so-and-so doing little boys in the Vatican showers, who does the Pope call? Except the police. But it's the same thing because the church don't call the police neither.
I know.
And it is that level of authoritarian magnitude, if you will. And it's scary as hell.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things that it's got to the point now where, well, like this. I mean, you're just sitting there going, I know it may not be a crime right now, but you got to sit there going, is somebody in the Federal Election Commission doing something with the same with Herman Cain? I mean, because not the allegations. That's fine. I mean, you know, that'll play itself out. But this whole thing with the money, where, you know, where this whole thing with the Koch brothers, you know, funneling money through essentially dummy corporations to get it to them. And this is when the rules have been changed so bad that you almost don't have to. You can have the Koch brothers walk over there and take it over in satchels.
Yeah, straight up.
I know. But let me let you get on. I'm sorry I took up so much time.
Oh, no trouble at all. Good to hear from you, Luke.
Bye, bud. You have a good evening.
You too. Bye now. Bye. From the hills of East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm here.
I know the feeling.
There you go. I don't know what you say. Well, pursuant to the satchels of money, I can remember my dad talking about a politician in South Carolina named Edgar Brown. They called him Satchel Brown. And whenever he wanted something passed or whatever, he appeared on the floor of the General Assembly with a satchel full of green books. Or green books, excuse me.
And had amazing success, I'll warrant.
Well, it's just amazing how cohesive these people could be when they see $100 bills or whatever.
They are profound, you know, for as silent as they are very conversational. But the sad thing is there's not going to be any meaningful investigation here because there is no argument that it's illegal. I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes on Sunday night with Jack Abramoff. Did you see it?
I saw part of it. I wanted to see the special they had about Andy Rooney.
That bit, you know, with, I didn't know quite how to take his sudden conversion and his discussion of how, you know, corruption has to be stopped now that he's the one who's not getting to be corrupt anymore. But there was a lot of truth in what he said. But any attempt to rein in the money that isn't very, very simple, very, very strict, and freighted with very harsh consequences is not going to get the job done. Because as quick as any law gets written, there are people who work triple time trying to find out ways around it. I guess that's just human nature, isn't it, Jim?
Well, it's the fox tending the hen house. You know? That's the simplest way I know how to put it, Bob. It's sort of like, and excuse the comparison here, when FDR appointed Joe Kennedy to be head of the SEC. Except this is in reverse. He said it takes a crook to catch a crook.
Well, yeah.
Think of that in reverse, really. I mean, but there are no people like FDR who can appoint somebody who has enough legitimate and know-how to do what is necessary and to get the people who are benefiting by this stuff. I mean, they passed all these laws about congressmen receiving more than $25 for a meal and all this kinds of stuff. But they found ways to circumvent that. And like I say, that crowd up there is just the best that money can buy. Of the money, by the money, and for the money. That's how I see it, and I hate it.
And, you know, from the trying to fix things standpoint, it's awfully hard to come up with a solution that might work. You know, I've got another story here in the stacks.
Well, it do work, Bob.
Pardon?
They don't want to cut the money supply off, because that's the reason half of them are up there, in my opinion.
Indeed. You know, I've got another story here in the stack, and this one, even the little peacenik that I am, this one gave me the creeps. It turns out that the Pentagon, Jim, has been caught, get this, buying counterfeit military spare parts from China. And the Senate Armed Services Committee is trying to review more than 100,000 pages of DOD documents and material from more than 70 companies. And they have found thus far around 1,800 cases of suspected counterfeit electronics being sold to the Pentagon. The number of parts, you know, there's 1,800 individual cases, but the number of parts is over a million, Jim. Just get this. The suspect parts include salvaged and recycled components that were burned off old circuit boards, washed in rivers, dried on streets, and sanded down to remove identifying marks. The parts were subsequently installed in such key defense systems as the Air Force's C-17 aircraft, the Marine Corps' CH-46 helicopter, and the Army's Terminal High Altitude Area Defense Missile System. According to John McCain, and you know he loves him some military, right?
Exactly.
The risks to national security are alarming. He says the committee will press for amendments to a defense bill that could limit counterfeit electronics in the supply chain. My problem with that, Jim, is you would think that the supply chain would already have limitations on counterfeit parts. I mean, doesn't it sort of go without saying that you don't buy counterfeit parts for America's military hardware?
No, you don't. Particularly ones that are, well, no, you just don't.
And so there's an element or an aspect of closing the barn door after the horse is gone on this. What you do is you refer those 70 defense contractors and those 1,800 cases and those million parts to the Justice Department, and you say, yea, verily, pursue thou indictments and put these bastards under the jail. Because these defense these are 1% people, right?
Oh, yeah, and they're extremely rapacious, when it comes to dealing with U.S. government. And, and these contractors are notorious for their misdeeds. For lack of a better term, that's exactly what it is. And this, of course, if this story is true, I have a doubt. I don't know. But if this is true, then this is very, very serious. I mean, don't we have enough people in our own Silicon Valley and other people like, these contractors like Raytheon or whomever, are they the ones who are doing this kind of stuff?
No names are named here.
Like motherboards and stuff like that being...
Circuit boards, yeah. Motherboards, what have you.
That have been washed in a river or whatever.
Washed in a river, dried on a street, and sanded down to remove identifying marks.
I don't know what to say about that, Bob. I have no answer for that.
Here's the real screamer out of it, Jim. Senator Carl Levin, who has been in the Senate from the state of Michigan since God was a baby, he says that, a million parts is a big number. But he says what's more disturbing is that they are just at the tip of the iceberg. But your question is, I think, extremely valid. How is it that we have these weapons systems that have gone through a design and a prototype and a testing phase?
Oh, yeah, all the R&D and that stuff, it's just incredible. I mean...
And they weren't designed to be run on parts manufactured in the United States? I mean, I'm the least hawkish, least warmongering person I think I know. And I know some pretty peacenik people. But even I, Jim, even I look at this... And you look into the deep, you look a few decades out in the future, that there's that criticism that military institutions are always busy preparing to fight the last war, right? Well, how do you even approve the purchase of parts from China? Knowing full well that if that's where the parts are coming from, all they have to do is stop filling up the container ships, and what, our military crumbles? What, we're Iran now? How many American fighter jets did Iran have to leave on the ground after the hostage crisis because we stopped sending them spare parts?
quite a few.
Well, we're in that position now. And if these systems are running on counterfeit parts already, then who knows what the failure rate is?
I don't know, Bob. They're supposed to have contract specialists or a contract or a COR contract resolution, but people who are supposed to oversee the quality of parts coming in and this, that, and the other. And apparently, if what you say is true, no fact beginning with if, but if what you say is true, then this is extremely serious. And I'm very unhappy to hear this because, I mean, you've got men and women who are basically standing on the walls of our country being supported by systems that might not work or are inferior. And that's
And some executive is going home at night saying, oh, we sure pulled a fast one on the Pentagon today, honey.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, those people are just as guilty as any Al-Qaeda agent or whatever, or if you will, going back to the Manchurian candidate to, what's her name, Angela Lansbury and her son, Senator Iceland, being accused that they could not be more guilty and if they were in the pay of the Soviet Union back when that movie was made. Do you see what I'm trying to tell you?
I certainly do. You know, because contemporaneous with me finding this story today, Jim, I also, of course, saw the front page of the New York Times about this new IAEA, International Atomic Energy Association, report on Iran. And they were unequivocal and said that Iran is trying, that its nuclear program is not civilian and not peaceful, and that they are satisfied in saying that it is designed to get a nuclear weapon. Now, we'll save the particulars of Iran with a nuclear weapon for another discussion, because I don't think that's sufficient to support warfare.
You know, I saw this program last night about a guy who was sent to interview and sort of like talk to Saddam Hussein before he was executed. And, you know, he was basically trying to get a hole on this guy's mind, Saddam. And even Saddam mentioned the fact that one of the reasons that he, though he did not have weapons of mass destruction, he always tried to project the idea that he might have in order to prevent Iran from invading his country. Because he saw basically that war, even though he declared a victory, he in his heart knew damn well that what 8 years of war had accomplished absolutely nothing between those two countries.
No, nothing but the vast amounts of attrition.
Exactly. And it was simply a bloodletting operation that was performed on the body of Iraq as well as Iran. And now you've got this guy, Ahmadinejad, who's over there saying that there was no such thing as a Holocaust and who is absolutely, in my opinion, crazy. I mean, he can address the United Nations all he wants to. Just because a person can stand at the well of the United Nations, like Gaddafi did, doesn't mean that they have any grasp on, really, what I consider to be reality. I mean, this guy is just absolutely nuts.
Exactly. So this story breaks about the parts at the same time that the Iran story breaks about them possibly trying to achieve a nuclear weapon. And if you've followed it for the last couple of weeks, you know, the right wing has begun hopping up and down a little faster, a little faster, a little faster, Jim. With their saber rattling, wanting war with Iran. And Netanyahu and the Israeli government are saying, well, you know, we might just do this ourselves.
Well, that's a possibility.
So yeah. try to imagine us getting in a shooting war with Iran and our helicopters, some aircraft, and missile defense systems being run on broke-ass, sanded-down, washed in a river, dried on a street, counterfeit circuit boards that may have come out of a 1994 Motorola television.
Well, yeah, that's somewhat incredible.
You know, the middle of the Iranian desert is not a good place to find that out.
No, it isn't. And I have no doubt that Ahmadinejad would like to have his own nuclear program with military capability. And
me either, especially when you consider that, you know, India is nuclear, Pakistan is nuclear.
I mean, it's the proliferation of nuclear weapons among smaller nations and things like that. I mean, there was a time when the nuclear bomb was confined to the United States and the Soviet Union, but now you have a lot of other people who have them, and as I've said before, when they get these weapons like that, particularly these fundamentalist religious fanatics like over there, I mean, I can hear them crying, Allah Akbar, and pressing a button. It's going to be like, you know, throwing a ping pong ball into a room filled with mousetraps that are filled with other ping pong balls. You've got a chain reaction going there.
Well, and there's more than one nation capable of doing that, or other languages in which the same thing may be similarly said.
Yeah, you're right, unfortunately. And, of course, since the breakdown of the former Soviet Union, there's a proliferation of all types of bombs that are being, and we've talked about this years in the past, being sold to the highest bidder by these nations. And these are suitcase bombs and stuff like that, you know, were controlled fairly rigidly when the Soviet Strategic Rocket Forces under the old communist regime was in power. And at least they had a hold on these things. And now, I don't know, years ago when we talked about it, there were like 149 loose they couldn't account for in their inventory. So who knows how many are really loose, and who knows how many people in the Russian Federation who are willing to sell to the highest bidder.
And meanwhile, Herb Cain doesn't realize that the Chinese already have nuclear weapons.
Oh, he's just an idiot. I mean, I saw him on CNN this afternoon, and he said, and I'm sure you may have seen this too, that the closest thing he ever came to sexual harassment was to say to this young woman, "You are about the same height as my wife." And he said that the door was opened and that nobody could see any sexual harassment occurring or taking place. And the rest, he just said, "I don't remember."
Yeah, he got a case of that Reagan disease, right?
Well, I mean, you know, discretionary memory is a very dangerous thing. And not only is it intellectually dishonest, but it is dishonest in every other way. I mean, Rush Limbaugh said there were five. I heard, according to what you were saying earlier, I mean, I had to turn part of it off and watch the last days of Pompeii on TCM. I said, I can't deal with hearing this bloated idiot sit there behind that microphone and saying all this crap. It's just...
Well, I don't appreciate you calling me that, Jim. No, I'm kidding.
I don't have enough energy in my medicine cabinet to drink, because every time I hear that son of a bitch get on the air and start raising his filthy mouth. But nonetheless, you know, Herman Cain saying, "I just forgot." Oh, yeah. I'm sure he forgot all right. He wants to forget it. But it's just incredible. I mean, what's coming out today? I mean, you've got this football coach up there who's playing the role of some type of modern Tiberius, having little boys, he probably had little boys maybe swimming under his toenails, nipping them as Tiberius supposedly did on the Isle of Capri. You remember that story?
I do indeed.
The minnows, of course, one of the minnows may have been Caligula, who was so bombed out by that and mentally disfigured by Tiberius. And, of course, the minnows who didn't escape, Tiberius had thrown off a 1,000-foot cliff on Capri. But I digress here, as Sophia of the Golden Girls would say. I don't mean to get off into that, but I just thought I'd mention it.
Well, you know, there is no overvaluing a good classical education, Jim.
Well, I know you have a penchant for Roman and Greek history, and I know you know a lot about, the reigns of the 12 Caesars and the accounts of the gossip, Suetonius, whomever it was who wrote that treatise about them, but Tiberius was particularly, he was pretty unsettled man, and I think his own people probably killed him with a pillow, didn't they? Did they either smother him to death with a pillow?
I believe, and yes, I believe so. And
Claudius, his wife, who I think may have, Claudius, he came later on, or has some.
Yeah, it was Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho. And then came the Flavians, Titus's father, and then Titus, and yeah.
But the connection here and there is not lost between what happened in Rome many years ago and what's happening here, except it's just another form of insanity. And
it is.
And these people who have no quality of leadership, no character of design by any format known to man.
And driven by a wholly irrational and irrelevant sense of entitlement.
Oh, for gain, exactly. And they don't care what happens to the rest of the country, just their own particular, idea of what of their world view is. And I don't really think that people like Kane and some of the other idiots that they've got up there, if you actually ask these people to define what is your worldview, I don't think they could really answer you with other than just something.
No, it's reminiscent of that one character from Miss Congeniality who in the pageant is asked, what's your idea of the perfect day? And she said, low temperatures, about 65 degrees, not so cold you have to have a coat, just a light jacket. That's a Michelle Bachmann, that's a Newt Gingrich, that's a Herb Cain ad.
Oh, Lord, yes, I'll tell you, it's just like the world's going to hell in a handbasket.
But the asteroid missed us.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, that was the size of an aircraft carrier. Who's to know when another one may approach? I mean, we're swimming in a sea of the universe, and there are all types of things out there.
Oh, there's a lot of rocks.
Oh, yeah, and it would not take a whole lot to disorient one or whatever to be hit by another to change its trajectory and cause a lot of nastiness here on the planet of this Earth. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, we never used to hear.
Certainly did the dinosaurs in, didn't it?
Well, yeah, that's one theory. Another theory is perhaps it could have been disease or some type of thing, but apparently there are a number of people who support the theory that thing that had landed in the Gulf of Mexico caused such a climate destruction that they starved to death because
they were reptiles and it got too cold. Of course, I always remember when I think about the demise of the dinosaurs, I always think of that wonderful Gary Larson Far Side cartoon. I'm sure you remember the Far Side, don't you, Jim?
Oh yeah.
The real reason the dinosaurs became extinct, and it's a drawing of a whole bunch of dinosaurs standing around smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. I don't know, Bob.
It's just the weird way my mind works, but yeah.
Well, I understand that. It's an incredible situation when you have people like Herman Cain, who's going to try to be our chief executive and the most powerful man in the world, trying to say this, I just don't remember. And that is something I'm just repeating.
There's an expanded reality there that if it is true, in fact, that he does not remember reaching under a woman's pleated skirt and fondling her genitals while at the same time pulling her head toward his crotch, and I'm not trying to be prurient here, if he doesn't remember that, that generally means that he did that so many times it all runs together.
What's he had, a lobotomy? You have to remember.
I've never done that. No,
You know, come on, we all remember the things that we do that aren't exactly according to Hoyle, for lack of a better term. We know exactly what we do.
Ain't according to the Marcus of Queensberry rules, yes.
We don't forget that kind of stuff, and you know damn well he's lying through his teeth. And, you know, my Lord, how anybody could get behind him. It's amazing, but, you know, it's incredible. 2 weeks ago...
Well, Jesus, you wouldn't want to be in front of him, apparently, Jim.
Oh, not really. No, I wouldn't want to shower with him either. And I can tell you this, I mean, you know, but, I mean, you had people like Don Imus on his program 2 weeks ago. He was all for Kane. And now he's changed his mind. He doesn't know because of these allegations about a Kane's sexual misconduct or his activities with these women. But, you know, I just don't think these women are going to go up there and try to make this stuff up.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Exactly. I mean, in many cases, when women are victims of things like that, they are so ashamed of it, they want to just put it behind them and forget it as best they can.
Yeah, you know, Texas Betsy noting, Jim, then what actually does he remember? How bad is his memory?
Well, it must be pretty bad, but, you know, it's not bad. His memory is simply discretionary. That son of a bitch knows exactly what he did. He probably knows when he did it and where he did it and with whom he did it. But now he's trying to just gloss it over, pretend like it didn't happen, but the world simply doesn't work that way.
Herb Cain's memories may vary. Your experience, Herb Cain's memory is discretionary. Your experience may vary.
Right. Be sure your sins will find you out, because when you go and try to elect yourself or be elected to the presidency, don't you know this stuff's going to come out? It has to, because people know you win. I mean, if you can't vet the highest leader in the land, as they vetted me for jobs that I've had in the federal government, then what are you getting? I mean, that, you know,
it's rather an inescapable question, isn't it?
Really? I mean, if Herm Cain, or whatever his name is, the son of a bitch, Herman Cain, if he had to go through some of the background checks and security clearances and all the other stuff that I've had to go through, and this is true, he would not be qualified. He would be rejected.
Well, you know, just assume for a moment, Jim, that the guy wins the presidency. I know. It's enough to send half the Horn audience off to the medicine cabinet, but still. Just assume for a moment that the guy gets the presidency. How do you trust him with a security clearance?
Doesn't have one. You can't. You can't have that type of thing. You know, what I am saying is this. Whatever they subject members of the career federal service to, they should subject to those people who are the leaders and the members of the cabinet and all that, to the same type of security clearance. And if they can't gain that security clearance, then they don't need to be in their job. They're not qualified. They're not fit. That's all there is to it. I mean, the whole thing is entitled Fitness to Serve. And if you have certain things in your background, then you simply cannot hold office. That's it. I'm sorry. But, I mean, I know that's not being realistic, but that's the way I think it should be. If they're going to take a lowly GS person like myself to what they did constantly, I mean, you know, whenever they had finished adjudicating one security clearance, they had to begin another, because it took a year and a half to adjudicate a security clearance, okay? And it was constantly ongoing, because the things in your life may have changed and your behavior may have changed, and not for the better.
And that's what they were always looking out for, okay? You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And, you know, during my whole time in federal service, I mean, I was always being monitored. Finances, police records, police blotters, anything. And I can remember walking in the streets of D.C. and being trailed. They wanted to know where I was visiting and where I was going. I mean, you can spot those guys from a mile off. I've seen enough of them. I work with enough of them to know.
And they're not exactly trying to be circumspect about it. You were supposed to know.
They're not. I mean, you know, and I get on the subway and, you know, you can see different people and, you know, they weren't there for the ride. They were there on a mission. That's exactly the way it was. I'm glad I'm out of it now. I really am, because it just got really tiresome. It really did. And your phone was tapped constantly. Mine was tapped. I knew it was tapped. I could hear them. They weren't so good. I called them one night saying, well, that conversation's over. And I just said, look, you guys, y'all better know what the hell you're doing, because I said, this is ridiculous. I said, I can hear you.
Yeah, and on the other, do you think he really heard us, or is he just saying that? No, I heard that too.
You can hear him. I mean, because you can hear him talking about the equipment and stuff like that. And let me shut my mouth. I don't need
sitting to in a white panel van across the street, marked Acme Dry Cleaning.
Well, I mean, you know, they got parabolic mics that can pick up a conversation inside of a stone house, and you know, they're quite good at what they do.
Except when you hear them talking about it.
Well, I mean, you know, basically what I tried to do was to keep my nose clean and pay my bills and do what I was supposed to do and not talk about things I wasn't supposed to talk about and basically be a good boy.
But to a certain extent, Jim, isn't that evidence of a governmental structure in the throes of extreme debilitating paranoia?
Not necessarily, because it's been going on for as long as they've had surveillance devices.
Well, I have to tell you, speaking of surveillance and spies and so forth, I have just started what appears to be a fascinating new book. I got done with The Guns of August reread, and it was wonderful. We'll be having the author on to talk about this book sometime soon. The author's name is David Stewart, and it is a new examination of the whole Aaron Burr foo-fraw. And if you recall how Aaron Burr came to grief, it was because he was working with General Wilkinson in New Orleans, who was in the pay of the Spanish crown, and ratted out Burr instead of having his own cover with the crown blown. You're right. It's been going on for a while, Jim.
Oh, Lord. It's been surveillance and ciphers and all this kind of stuff, spy versus spy, and you know, people who are eavesdropping on other people. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover brought it to a fine art, and it's, you know, basically been continued. And you know, I don't have any problem with it because I don't have anything really to hide.
But that doesn't make it any less problematic.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. And, you know, I mean, I will say this, that the main thing you have to be with any of these people or any application you fill out, you have to be truthful. You cannot lie.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that can save you from their clutches. That's the main thing about it. And I've said more than I should have said tonight. I was just moved by what I saw with Herman Cain and, of course, about this coach at wherever. I mean, God knows how long he could have gotten along with that. My Lord in heaven, that's just incredible.
And under the aegis of a foundation whose express purpose was to help underprivileged boys.
What was the name of that foundation? Off the second what?
Second Mile.
Second Mile?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm afraid he may have gone the second mile, but I think he went the third and fourth mile beyond the area of safety. And, you know, Bob, I just do not understand And believe you me, I've never been one to point fingers at anybody on your program about their sexual proclivity. But I simply cannot understand why in the world anybody would find activity like that in any way satisfying, gratifying, or acceptable.
It is worth remembering, Jim, because, you know, the two cases we're talking about here are sexual abuse as perpetrated by Herman Cain.
I mean,
and sexual abuse as perpetrated, both of these cases alleged to have been, by a high-ranking member of the coaching staff at Penn State University. They may seem wildly different. One has to do with little boys, and another has to do with arguably heterosexual relations with women. But
what I don't
just let me finish real quick.
I'm sorry.
And I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think this is important enough to finish. And that is this. They are not at their basic, most essential levels. Sex has nothing to do with it. It has to do with power and dominance and perhaps internalized feelings of inadequacy. But the bottom line is it's you know, because no rape is ever about sex. Rape is always about power and violence. And that's the case in both of these instances. You know, Herman Cain could have had sex consensually with virtually anyone he wanted, given his position. But it is the enjoyment of compelling it as an expression of power that gets that kind of person off. And the same thing with raping little boys in the shower. It is a manifestation of power and dominance, and it is sick, 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 sick.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you see the distinction, right?
Exactly. You know, including a sexual liaison, from my past experience, it's always been based upon mutual attraction, mutual consent, and mutual satisfaction, and a conclusion to that particular type of activity. Power had nothing to do with it. It was simply, you know, basically what I've just said. I don't know how to explain it any better.
Well, no, I think you've explained it very well. Jim, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate it.
Okay, well, listen, you have a good evening, and take care, and let's hope we will not hear of this stuff anymore, but I'm afraid we're probably going to hear more.
It's not going away anytime soon, and just as soon as it does go away, there will be more, because it's hardwired into the society. Jim, have a wonderful evening.
Much to my regrets, you're right, probably. Good night.
Bye now. Jim, calling from not too far away at all. You see, all of this ties in with a fundamental sickness that lies in the heart of the very structure of the Republican Party. Jude sent this along. It's a book from, it's a clip or a quote from Max Blumenthal's book, Republican Gomorrah. And in that book, Blumenthal makes reference to Eric Fromm's analysis of his writing of 1973 called The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. And it goes like this, and it is with reference to a very dark topic, necrophilia, but this works by extension. The phenomenon of necrophilia, concluding that it extended beyond the traditional concept of erotic attraction to rotting flesh and also manifested itself in malignant aggression unalloyed from sex in acts of the pure passion to destroy. That's Eric Fromm's words. Fromm identified necrophilious characters as among the most dangerous members of any society. They are the haters, the racists, those in favor of war, bloodshed, and destruction, he wrote. They are dangerous not only if they are political leaders, but also as the potential cohorts for a dictatorial leader. They become the executioners, terrorists, torturers. Without them, no terror system could be set up. Max, together with his research partner, Michael Maccabee, concluded from Fromm the following, at page 121 of the book. Fromm surveyed a diverse group of research subjects for necrophilia's anti-life tendencies. Across the board, Fromm detected a profound link between necrophilia's character traits and right-wing ideology. The study asked the respondents a number of questions that permitted correlating their political opinions to their character. Fromm wrote, "In all of the samples, we found that anti-life tendencies were significantly correlated to political positions that supported increased military power and favored repression against dissenters." Jude noting, it drives them crazy to live in a world that otherwise operates by love, as they only seek, as Fromm puts it, the passion to destroy. Let that rattle around a little bit. Quick trip to the mailbag. Corey down in the Free State of Louisville says this has been a good time to have satellite TV. No campaign ads. He said, I caught a few Bashir are evil ads, but I've been blissfully unaware this political season it will be much worse in 14 when Addison McConnell is up for his re-coronation, and it will be that in Kentucky. Jack in Shreveport says, Bob, a long, long time ago, I worked at a defense contractor for a short period of time. Every part and assembly procedure had a paper trail and a standard of work done during assembly. Parts coming in are inspected, assemblies going out are tested and inspected. There's absolutely no way that so many counterfeit parts could enter the system without a whole lot of people being involved and being paid off. Then again, Jack, depending on how long ago a long, long time ago is, that's a different America. Remember, this is an America where the delivery of mail to the frontline soldiers in Iraq was outsourced to a Halliburton or somebody like it. The much derided mess hall that was a favorite complaint of soldiers but kept them fed, the mess hall was outsourced to Halliburton. When the idea of something like national defense becomes instead a vehicle for the turning of a profit, everything goes sideways. Clayton noting that with 1% in Ohio on issue number 2, no to issue 2 is at 67%. Kim noting with regard to Herm Cain, let me loose with him. I worked with men for 30 years. Let him try to grab me or adjust where my head is at. Stupid man. And Jude continuing, extrapolating from what she had previously sent, she said, with regard to Herm being forgetful, we don't forget because we are thinking. No way can one forget a moment of doing wrong. No way, unless one is a liar. And I would add to that, Jude, unless one is a sociopath. Meanwhile, as far as the contract suppliers are concerned, with an eye toward the historic, David in Tennessee says, good Republicans have screwed the federal government dry and sideways since forever. Good Republicans sold at triple the going rate used cotton blankets to the Union Army in 1862 when new wool blankets were called for in the purchase order they were paid to fulfill, and we're surprised. Why? And a note coming in from Kate. She says, this might not be a good time for me to be at the keyboard. After an hour of hearing all the aggressive, violent male rantings, I am, and she's not talking about us, she's talking about the playback, I think, I am moved to shrug and roll my eyes. These folks are sick and insecure. Their only recourse is to lash out. Not to worry, they eventually get what they have coming. They know it, and it scares them to death. We who are insurgents are very, very quiet, very, very powerful. And on, says Kate, to another subject. Thanks to the folks who have hit the button tonight, and welcome to new listeners. For those of you who don't understand how this all works, there is equipment to keep upgraded, the power needs to stay on, the internet connections are costly. I'm reminded of the old days when there were nights when we didn't know if the mic would be hot. If you're sitting on a $10 bill, pass it forward. Consider what you're spending in the drive-thrus. We are teetering on the edge. Bob spends much time preparing the stacks for every program. He doesn't need the additional stress of wondering if the power will stay on. Consider for a minute what it would be like to log on some evening to dead air. We aren't far from that, folks. Kate, way out west. So we've got about 30 minutes left in the program. We're going to take a little break. John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, man of many hats, and much genius, sent a tune in a little bit ago. A moment of inspiration for him. He said, some modern Aussie rock. Electric Mary is the name of the band. Watching the insanity of the 2012 pageant, I'd think this would sum up the innermost thoughts of many Americans. Again, from Electric Mary, this is Let Me Out. And this is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice. That. I'm trying to think what it reminds me of, but yeah, the name of the band is Electric Mary.
let me out. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you very, very much. That's about 25 minutes before the hour. Jack following up on the counterfeit parts story. He says, Bob, it was in the first half of the 80s. By thinking about the environment I worked in, I completely forgot the times we live in. You made a great point. And see, the early to mid-80s, Jack, Ronnie Reagan had not yet had, well, the system itself hadn't had time to be peeled apart and turned into just another sorry excuse for profit-making. And by the way, Thomas just dropped me a note. He says, Ohio issue number 3 on the ballot is a rejection of the Affordable Care Act. And at the same time that issue 2, repealing the nasty anti-collective bargaining thing, is looks like it's steaming along, 61% of Ohio voters are rejecting the Affordable Care Act, which in turn was held to be quite constitutional today by a pair of the single most conservative right-wing judges the D.C. Circuit has to offer. That's how far out there the weirdos are. Now, I haven't seen Central Time, of course, so their polls probably aren't even closed, but I haven't seen anything on the Mississippi Personhood Amendment, and I'm almost afraid to look. You know, we're winding down 2011, and it seems anymore that every year sort of staggers and stumbles to its conclusion in a haze of fear and shame. So too with 2011. You know, I think, and this is a moment of crazy. Here's your moment of crazy with Crazy Bob. You know what I think we ought to do? I think New Year's and New Year's Eves and such, the beginnings and ends of years, would be much nicer. And perhaps maybe the years themselves would be a little bit different if we didn't end them and begin them in the dead and darkest part of at least the Northern Hemisphere's transit around the sun. And the same thing by extension for the Southern Hemisphere, because that's the dead and darkest period of their transit around the sun. Of course, it was religion that mandated what we have now. For most of the time, the ancients, and by those I mean the Romans, they celebrated their new year in March. Because March, of course, is the month dedicated to Mars, the god of war, and the coming of spring was represented by the ability to go back on campaign. Julius Caesar was assassinated when he was assassinated because, had he not been taken down when he was getting ready to cross to Greece and begin his invasion of Parthia, which might well have changed forever the face of the planet upon which we live. You can make an argument there would have been no Islam, perhaps no Christianity. One simply doesn't know. But it would be kind of nice to start the new year on March the 1st instead of January the 1st. That way you work out all the dark and the nasty at the very end, and you don't start a new year facing more dark and nasty. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. But that's so much speculating on something that will not happen. But the fact of the matter is, we are going to end on a terrifying note. The article that was capturing everyone's attention today in the New York Times,
David E. Sanger and William J. Broad's article, United Nations Finds Signs of Work by Iran Toward Nuclear Device. The long-awaited report relies on evidence of far greater scope and depth than any of the International Atomic Energy Agency has made public before. It represents the harshest judgment the agency has ever issued in its decade-long struggle to pierce the secrecy surrounding the Iranian program. It says that there is a credible case that Iran has carried out activities relevant to the deployment of a nuclear device. Now, forgive me if that sounds a little bit to me like George W. Bush and Colin Powell talking about nuclear-related program-designed activity plots of plans. You remember that all before Iraq. But this will be abundantly sufficient to get the saber-rattlers going, as if they haven't been going. Because they have been going. We can go back just to this past Sunday, where someone who is wholly irrelevant in the world today was naturally a guest on This Week with Christiane Amanpour. Why you would want kinda sleazy Rice to offer an opinion on anything when she doesn't have the power to affect anything is beyond me, but lo and behold, there she was. And you know, the reason you do that is because you gotta have somebody there to wave the bloody shirt, rattle the saber, and try to get the United States somehow interested in another disastrous war in that part of the world. Because after all, war is good for business, especially when you're buying circuit boards, counterfeit circuit boards for the Chinese, marking them up at American manufactured rates and sticking them in aircraft that may fall out of the freaking sky as a result. But oh, that's okay, because we had a great quarterly profit dividend declaration, and our price to earnings ratio is magnificent, baby. Yeah, tell us about it, Condi.
My contacts are so annoying. I just want to rip them out.
Oh, I hate commercials. No, Condoleezza Rice is not is not annoyed by her contacts. ABC, how I hate thee. I had that thing queued up and it redid it. Oh, God. Yeah, okay, here we go.
A deadly morning in Baghdad today as three bombs exploded in a sprawling market. The attack came as shoppers were preparing for the Muslim festival of Eid. And it comes just hours after Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told his security forces to prepare for stepped-up violence. The backdrop, of course, is the U.S. decision to pull out of Iraq by the end of the year. It's a decision that now has some concern that al-Qaeda will reestablish a foothold in the country.
Reestablish?
All questions for former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. She has a new memoir, No Higher Honor, and I spoke with her earlier.
Oh, for pity's sakes, it's a book hustle now, isn't it? Or at least that's the pretext.
Madam Secretary, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Christiane.
So you write in...
So, Ms. Rice, when you get up in the morning to put your makeup on, how do you get all that blood off your hands first? No, sorry. Christiane's pulling... she's cutting the fat hog, and she ain't going to axe that.
In your book, obviously a lot about the Bush administration, the Bush years. You also talk about when you first met the current President Barack Obama during a hearing, and you...
Gee, did you call him my husband, too? Just
say. Say his questions were sharp, not rude. He actually seemed interested in my answers, and you say you were really impressed. A lot of people question whether he had what it took to be commander-in-chief of the lone superpower. Did he prove them wrong?
Obviously, I think President Obama has done a number of things right, particularly in the war on terror. And I think that President Obama has indeed carried the war on terror forward in a very effective way.
So let me ask you then about the most controversial of events of your tenure, and that was the Iraq War. For better or for worse, the United States is in it. President Obama has now decided to call an end and to bring all the troops out, portraying it actually as a triumph. Others are saying it was a defeat. Do you think it was right not to push and keep for, I mean, at the very least, 10,000 U.S. troops to guarantee some kind of security, to train and to be there for counterterrorism?
frankly, I think it would help the regional balance to have a residual American presence there. We need to find a way to help the Iraqis sustain themselves through this period and to deal with their somewhat meddlesome neighbor in Iran.
Of course, the administration says it's because the Iraqis wouldn't agree to immunity. But the real issue is that this administration insisted on acceding to State Department and Pentagon lawyers' demand that they get this immunity ratified by the Iraqi parliament. You did not do that. You got the agreement without forcing it through the parliament. Why did they have to do that? Was it a mistake for President Obama to do that?
Well, Christian, I'm really rather reluctant to criticize negotiations that I didn't participate in. But it would have clearly been better to have a residual force from my point of view, and perhaps there was a way out of the immunity clause that wasn't taken.
So is there a risk now of everything that America paid unraveling?
Yes. What is at risk here is not just the sacrifice of the United States, which is considerable, but also a...
I guess by the sacrifice of the United States, which is considerable, she's talking about those 5,000 or so American service personnel that she got killed, helped get killed, for no good reason whatsoever. We've just kind of glossed over that whole thing. Madam former secretary, how do you look in blaze orange with little plastic shower shoes, honey? Would you rather be at Leavenworth or that maximum security facility in Colorado where maybe you could be bunked up next to the Unabomber where you'd deserve to be? What's your preference, Madam Secretary? X.
A pillar of a new kind of democratic stability in the Middle East.
And perhaps equally important, if not more, is Afghanistan. The Obama administration, sources are telling me, are likely to change their role even before 2014, from a combat to a much lesser role, maybe advisory. Is that safe at this time? Is the Taliban anywhere near being defeated?
Well, I'm not inside, but I don't see that the Taliban is anywhere near being defeated. And in fact, if you're looking for some kind of political arrangement, and ultimately there will have to be a political arrangement in Afghanistan that brings former warring elements in, but if you're looking for that arrangement, you should be in the strongest position, not the weakest. And I don't think that right now the Afghan government and the NATO mission is in a position to make that kind of political deal. So yes, I think there's a considerable risk in speeding up a timetable for Afghanistan.
In your book, you also write about Iran. The IAEA, the nuclear agency of the UN, this week is about to reveal, apparently, more details showing, apparently, that Iran is trying to weaponize. Do you think the United States, the Obama administration, has to ratchet up the confrontation? You talked this week about confronting Iran. Does that involve military confrontation by the U.S.?
Well, the United States should certainly make clear that the President of the United States will consider military action if necessary, because you never want to take that card off the table. I think there are other ways to confront Iran. You can confront Iran through even tougher sanctions. And I also think, Christian, this is one of the downsides of having our forces out of Iraq, because we can confront the Iranians in Iraq. So, yes, I think it's time to confront the Iranian regime, because it's the poster child for state sponsorship of terrorism. It's trying to get a nuclear weapon. It's repressed its own people. The regime has absolutely no legitimacy left. We should be doing everything we can to bring it down and never take military force off the table.
Let me ask you about 2012. I want to ask you in terms of foreign policy. You know, Republicans, they describe themselves as the adults in the...
Yeah. But the bottom line is she wants to see some people, you know, your friends' children, your friends, my neighbors. She wants to see them marching into Iran. Isn't she nasty? Just nasty. You'll forgive me if I take just a moment for this right here.
Tears. bachelor tonight. People say you're cold, but I think you're hot. Oh, candy, candy, oh, candy, candy.
Sing it. Just love Steve Earle.
Oh, kind of, talking to your girl. What's it gonna hurt? Come on, give me a whirl. Shake your body and let me see you go. One time for me, oh, kind of, I love you. So stand for me, kind of, show me what you got. They say you're too uptight, I say you're not. Dance around me, spinning like a top. Oh, kind of,
only Steve Earle. Only Steve Earle. Jesus, Condi Condi from The Revolution Starts Now. And, of course, somewhere along the way, you've likely seen this or heard this. Those open mics. I mean, it's one thing to go to open mic night, right, where anybody can get up and repeat their bad poetry and stuff like that. But there's a rule of microphones, and it obtains around here. And the rule of microphones is the same thing as the rule about guns. Always treat a firearm as if it is loaded. And always treat a microphone as if it is hot, as if it is on, as if it is listening to you. Because if you don't, you'll get bit. Still, by the same token, there's a little bit about this that makes you wonder if this was really, you know, an accident. Microphones accidentally left on after the G20 meeting picked up private conversation between U.S., French, and French presidents. French President Nicolas Sarkozy reportedly told U.S. President Barack Obama that he could not stand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and that he thinks the Israeli Prime Minister is a liar. According to a Monday report in the French website Arret sur Image, after facing reporters for a G20 press conference on Thursday, the two presidents retired to a private room to further discuss the matters of the day. The conversation apparently began with President Obama criticizing Sarkozy for not having warned him that France would be voting in favor of the Palestinian membership bid in UNESCO despite Washington's strong objection to the move. Shh. Memo to president, not sure. Even though he's a right-winger and a jackass, Nicolas Sarkozy is not your underling. He and the French can do as they see morally fit. And one of the morally fit things to do was to admit, well, you know, the Palestinians should be a part of the UN, all the full membership, but UNESCO? Yeah, fine. What duty did he have to warn the United States? Why did we need a warning? But anyway, despite Washington's strong objection. The conversation then drifted to Netanyahu, at which time Sarkozy declared, "I cannot stand him. He is a liar." According to the report, Obama replied, "You're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day." The remark was naturally meant to be said in confidence, but the two leaders' microphones were accidentally left on, accidentally on purpose, making the would-be private comment embarrassingly public. I'm not embarrassed, are you? Well, kind of halfway about sorta. The appropriate response to Nicolas Sarkozy saying, "I cannot stand him, he is a liar," is to respond, "That's right. The truth's not in him." Because it's not. Benjamin Netanyahu is a genocidal maniac. If you put straitjackets on him and Ahmadinejad jacket and put him in a room, it wouldn't sound like a sane guy and a crazy guy. It would sound like two crazy guys poking at each other with the purple crayons tucked between their toes, with which they would write on the wall.
Death to Israel. Death to Iran. Death to Iran. Death to Israel. It wouldn't take long before the walls were covered. The only thing I find embarrassing about it is the kind of whiny quality of Obama's response. You're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day. You're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day. Because after all, Benjamin Netanyahu is in charge of the White House. You're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day. In other words, Benjamin Netanyahu would never dare pick up the phone and call Nicolas Sarkozy and give him a piece of his mind. But by God, he doesn't mind picking up the phone and blessing out whoever happens to be the president of the United States. That is the embarrassing part, and it remains embarrassing. Marty noting, considering the state of the world in that area, with all the sabers being pointed at Iran, I think getting the capability to hit back would be paramount, at least if it were me. I would be trying to develop the ability to throw the punch. And Bob, why can't we ask questions about the Holocaust? Now don't send me letters. Considering the lies told throughout history to say that we can never question this, it makes me wonder what is being hidden. While I have no doubt that crimes against humanity were committed, the Jews were not the only people crimes were committed against, but apparently pointing that out probably gets one labeled a denier. There's a cover-up, Bob, and it stinks up on high, or at least it does to me. I have no doubt of the reality of the Holocaust and the numbers involved and what a horror it was and what a sickness. But Holocaust denial has been turned into a cottage industry by the right wing and by the real anti-Semites, the real kind. But it is also it has achieved a certain orthodoxy. In which the Holocaust is forever entwined with Israel as opposed to the Jewish people. The Israeli government as opposed to the people. It has been co-opted for political purposes, and that's, to my way of thinking, wrong. Oh, God, I hope I don't get a bunch of emails over that. Andy noting, Bob, the Israeli theocrats under Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu lost big with the UNESCO membership vote. 107 for Palestine admission and only 14 against. The rest of the world gets it. Not the U.S., especially our politicians. The rest of the world knows Israel is a radical theocratic state of psychopaths on a land grab of historic criminal proportions to be accomplished by any means necessary. Extermination of the indigenous Palestinians is not off Benji's or Hillary's table. It's the preferred method. He said, so who's running the USA, Benjamin Netanyahu or Mr. Obama? I'm going with Benji. It certainly isn't Mr. Obama. Mr. Obama can't go to the little boy's room without checking in with Benji. So that's the program for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, for participating, your ideas, your thoughts, your chat room participation. It's always fun to watch that roll along. Thanks for your kind contributions to help keep the lights on. November has started very roughly, frankly, and any help you can give via the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com is much appreciated, or the snail mail. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, and Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens, happens via WhiteRoseSociety.org. Big thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Learn about the Coal River Wind Project and everything else Coal River Mountain Watch is doing by going to the website join Coal River Mountain Watch and be part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.